the butt of the shotgun jabbing at Evan's face. Evan barely had time to get his legs up. His boots embedded themselves in Angel's stomach, and he went with the momentum, rotating into a backward somersault and catapulting Angel off. The guards smashed through the swinging doors into the ballroom. Evan scrambled up and charged after him, kicking through the doors. The right one slammed into Angel just as he got a hand on the shotgun. He rolled with the blow, coming onto his hands and knees as the shotgun skittered out of reach across the hardwood floor. He cast a longing glance after it, then rose to focus on Evan. They circled each other. Angel's foot position was solid, his base low. He kept his hands raised in a fighting position, palms turned in, unclenched, floating up around his face. A real fighter. His attack options, however, were limited, since Evan had to be taken alive. Evan had no such limitations. Angel led with a cross. Evan bladed his body, coming over the incoming arm with a Bilgi finger jab to the eye. He deflected the punch, his firmed middle finger simultaneously jellying the guard's right eye. Angel grunted, more shock than pain, and reeled back, one hand rising to the socket. Evan pressed his advantage, driving forward with a punch, but the injured man proved surprisingly agile. He threw a parry into Evan's triceps, knocking him off balance, then slammed a palm heel to the outside of Evan's jaw. He let his hand slide past Evan's chin after the impact, stepping behind him and locking him in a sleeper choke. The flurry was so quick that Evan barely registered the blur of Angel's hands. There was no time to process it now. His carotid was cinched, and he was losing blood to the head. His canted face was angled at the chandelier overhead, resplendent enough to rival the one in the foyer. The dripping crystal teardrops, rainbowed with ambient light, blurred and smeared. Static dotted his vision. A few more seconds, and he'd go out. With everything he had, he stomped his heel down into Angel's instep, a foot destruction targeting the proximal interphalangeal joint of the first metatarsal. The force of the impact shuddered Evan's bones right up his leg. This one Angel felt right away. Gasping, he released Evan and hobbled back, his right foot bent behind him, raised gingerly off the floor. He skipped another few steps, his left leg propping him up. One hand floated before his wrecked eye. He might have been weeping. It was hard to tell. His good eye stayed locked on Evan's hands, tracking their every movement. The Japanese master who had taught Evan hand-to-hand when he was a boy used to say, "If they're ready for a punch, go with a kick." Dum tek is the Cantonese name for the oblique kick, but Evan always preferred its street name, the schoolgirl. He turned his hips, chambering his knee high to the side, and pistoned his heel down and forward into Angel's left shin. The ankle, bearing the guard's full weight, collapsed. Angel went down, arms flailing for balance. Evan hit him with a stiff jab to the throat, crushing his windpipe and hastening his fall. As the dying guard thrashed about, guppying for air and slapping the hardwood, Evan walked over to the listing grand piano, the sole item in the deserted ballroom. It had been shoved to the far wall, a patina of dust coating the raised lid. Several of the strings had snapped. He picked out a good length and twisted the end loop free of the hitch pin, removing the wire. 4 feet of tempered high-carbon steel with good tensile strength. Useful. He coiled it into a coaster-size loop and stuffed it into his pocket. Shouts and approaching footfalls carried through the corridors. The others had figured out the gambit and were finally abandoning their posts at the periphery to crash in on the center of the house. This, too, fit Evan's plans. Behind him, Angel bucked stiffly, his heels rattling against the floor, a diminishing drumroll. Evan snatched up the fallen shotgun and sprinted from the ballroom. 37. More animal than human. When Evan eased through the misted glass door into the spa area, he heard Renee's voice squawking through a radio. "Don't know where he is. Keep David locked down until..." After throwing the deadbolt on the doors behind him, Evan peered around the corner and down the corridor of jacuzzis and saunas that led to the lap pool fringed with artificial grass at the end. David leaned drunkenly against the last door in the row, slugging overproof Bacardi from the bottle as two narcos paced on the fake grass and conferred over their radios. One held the less lethal shotgun, the other a Kalashnikov. The guy behind the Cuerno de Chivo was so hefty that rolls of fat bulged at the base of his neck. He wore a thin chin-strap beard and a gold pendant necklace with big diamond letters spelling out Calaca. Skeletons. These narcos were big on irony. Evan set the stock against his shoulder, preparing for the turn. Taking a corner was both art and math. Jack used to call it cutting the pie. Before he could move, Calaca looked up, spotting Evan, and started as if he'd been stabbed.
"Marco, allá!"
Shotgun raised, Evan whirled into the corridor and moved briskly toward them, letting the first round fly. It sailed inches past David's nose, striking Kalaka's forehead with a dull thud. The fat man staggered back, heels of his hands pressed to his skull, and tumbled into the pool. The AK-47 flew off his upflung arm, clattering onto the concrete across the water. Marco swung his shotgun over, but Evan's next round blew it out of his hands, sending it skittering over toward the pool. Evan never slowed. David fell back against the glass wall of the Korean mist room as Evan hurtled past, closing on Marco and whipping the shotgun stock up, clipping the narco under the chin. Marco reeled back into a reverse flip, his rising feet knocking the shotgun from Evan's hands. Evan had an instant to marvel at just how badly he'd underestimated Marco's fighting skills before Marco rotated back around onto his feet. He bounced low to cushion his landing, snapping off a quick left at Evan's face, crushing his eye. Evan blinked through the sting, his eye watering. Marco pressed his advantage, unleashing a flurry of punches. Caging his head with his forearms, Evan backpedaled in the narrow corridor, getting a little space as Marco hammered at him with bare-knuckle blasts. Finally he managed to shove Marco off, and they faced each other, panting. Beside them in the corridor, David recoiled into the wall, as if hoping to transport himself straight through it. Glancing over, Evan saw Calaca standing in the middle of the pool, having just regained his feet. He started to slosh toward the AK-47 at the far side of the pool. Evan couldn't let him get to that weapon. Evan's shotgun lay on the tile next to Marco's feet, the barrel pointed toward the pool. Evan dove for it, snatching it up and getting off a shot just before Marco drove a heel into his kidneys. The beanbag round flew across the spa and smacked into Kalaka's shoulder. The fat man went down again, gurgling water. Evan tried to bring the shotgun with him as he rolled onto his back, but Marco kicked it free. It glanced off Evan's cheek, then cracked off the thick glass enclosure of the rain shower. Evan threw himself up onto his feet. Marco feinted at him a few times, trying to create a reaction opening, but Evan didn't take the bait. Evan's lower back throbbed where he'd been kicked. His eye watered from the blow. Swelling pressed his cheek upward, a raw, numb tingling. Marco was a much better fighter than Evan. If they kept this up, he'd take Evan apart piece by piece. Evan had to land a single destruction blow quickly, take out a limb and press on from there. He didn't dare glance at the pool, but he heard Calaca surface again. Soon enough, the fat man would reach that Kalashnikov. Marco's eyes ticked to Evan's swollen cheek, broadcasting his next move. His feet set, his shoulders swiveling as he shot out another jab. Evan threw a pentaxilant double-hand glancing parry, slap-slap, to an arm trap, grabbing Marco's wrist and immobilizing the arm. With the heel of his hand, he shattered the elbow, blowing the arm out in the wrong direction. He tried to hold the chicken wing control, but Marco flailed free, his broken arm dangling limply at his side. Over in the pool, Kalaka forged through the water, taking another unsteady step toward his AK-47. Evan had to slow him down again. Marco bared his teeth, blinking sweat out of his eyes. Evan weighed the odds, knew he'd pay either way. Turning his back on Marco, he snatched up the shotgun and fired off another round at Kalaka. The beanbag ricocheted off the fat padded base of the man's skull, knocking him back underwater. Evan braced himself, knowing that the strike would come. And sure enough, Marco's sidekick hammered him into the wall. He heard himself grunt as if listening from afar. Marco's next kick was aimed not at Evan, but at the shotgun, jamming Evan's finger in the trigger guard and sending the gun flying. It crashed off the wall barely a foot from David's face and fell to the tile. Evan and Marco parted in the corridor, took some space. Marco cradled his broken arm across his stomach. Evan only had to watch his feet now. They circled each other, breathing hard. Marco set for a roundhouse, starting to throw his right leg. Evan thrust his lead foot forward into a Jeet Kune Do oblique jam, striking Marco's inner thigh at the junction of his hip. The counterstrike caused a crazy stop-motion effect, halting the kick before it started, Marco's bent leg hinging away in reverse, a slammed door wobbling back from the frame. Behind him, Evan heard Kalaka rise from the depths again, heard him paddle toward the AK. Evan let his eyes dart toward his dropped shotgun, but Marco moved swiftly, sweeping it across the slick tile with his instep. The gun plopped into a jacuzzi. Evan watched Kalaka's thick hand grab the far lip of the pool and pull his body to the edge. There was nothing Evan could do now until he got through Marco. Marco had only one move, and Evan waited for him to take it. He kept his eyes on Marco's rear leg. Again Marco tried for the roundhouse. This time Evan let it come. Ducking, he tucked his head behind his elbow and pointed the tip of his ulna at the incoming knee. It struck the patella precisely, shattering the kneecap. Marco screamed, skipping back on his good leg. Evan had his first chance to square up. He got off a graceless Shotokan front kick, a pure force delivery of the ball of his foot to the middle of Marco's chest. Marco flew back, banging through the glass door behind him and into the sauna. He landed in a crumpled heap across the sauna by the cedar bench. David remained flattened against the wall of the corridor like a piece of art, frozen, still clutching the Bacardi 151 bottle. Evan grabbed the rum from his hand and hurled it through the open door into the sauna. The bottle shattered against the heater, flame already chasing the high-proof spray. Fire rained down on Marco. He gave a shriek that sounded more animal than human. Evan swung the sauna door shut, snatched a jacuzzi net skimmer from its mount and rammed it under the handle, seating the end against the opposite wall of the corridor. The door was pinned shut, Marco trapped inside. Evan picked up Marco's shotgun and started toward the pool. Behind him, the muffled screams in the sauna reached a pitch he felt in his bones. Seemingly dazed, Kalaka was still in the pool, hunched over the lip, straining to reach the AK-47, which remained just out of reach. Evan stepped onto the artificial turf, his boots crunching audibly. Kalaka turned, and Evan hit him in the collarbone with a baton round, the impact punctuated by the splintering of the thin bone. To his credit, the guy kept his feet, but barely, sagging against the concrete edge. One beefy arm slapped the concrete behind him as he held his head and torso above the surface. With wide eyes, Kalaka peered back over his meaty shoulder. Then he turned to grab again for his gun. His fingertips edged it farther away. Grunting against the pain, he drew back for another lunge. Evan reached the paisley-shaped bar with its decorative Christmas lights arrayed across the surface. He smashed a few of the colorful oversized bulbs against the sustainably farmed rainforest wood, then tore the string free. "Espera," Kalaka said. He was shivering in the water, clinging to the concrete edge, his grooved skull glistening with droplets. "Por favor." Evan slung the string of broken lights over and into the pool. The effect was half explosion, half sound effect. A massive thump that knocked Kalaka upright. His body jolted a few times and then sank below the surface. A moment later he bobbed up, floating on his back, arms in a Christ-like spread, his gold necklace glittering in a tuft of chest hair that had escaped the collar. Two dogs, eight guards, two snipers, one doctor, and Dex. In the corridor, David remained where Evan had left him, frozen against the wall, arms raised. In the barred sauna across the space, flames continued to crackle, but Marco's screams had ceased. As Evan approached, David held out his hands, shrinking away.
"Please don't kill me. I'm a victim, too.
Evan grabbed his jacket, ripping the slender remote free from the inner pocket, taking the fabric along with it. The force of the motion spun David around, and Evan kicked him into the Korean mist room. He vanished into a billowy sheet of white haze, landing with a satisfying crash. Up the corridor, a Kalashnikov coughed out a burst and pebbled glass flew into sight, raining across the tile. Renee's men breaching the spa door. Evan jogged back over the fake turf, upgrading his less lethal shotgun to Kalaka's AK-47. On the bar, the tray of snacks was gone, replaced by a basket of apples. Evan pocketed two. One of the guard's heavy jackets was looped over the back of a lounge chair. He grabbed it as he ran by, heading for the elevator. The car was there and waiting, and he slid inside just as the cavalry spilled into view, weapons raised. Evan and Renee's men had a half second to stare at one another. Evan gave a little shrug as the doors rolled shut. The elevator whirred its way slowly to the basement. Arming sweat off his brow, he aimed the barrel of the Kalashnikov between the bumpers, waiting for them to part. They did. He had expected almost anything. But not this. 38. A bad night's work. Bags of blood, dangling from mounts inside glass-fronted medical refrigerator units, the shiny IV bags bulged like glossy red fillets. There was medical equipment, too, complex elephantine machines with tangles of cords and smooth beige casings, enough gurneys for a warfront triage center, and Dr. Franklin sprawled across one of the mattresses, his jaws loose around a rubber strap, blinking languidly. Evan threw the emergency stop lever, freezing the elevator, and stepped out into the basement. It seemed unreal, a warehouse of dream imagery. He stared through the refrigerator windows at the chilled bags, coded by date and donor name. They hung like shiny fruits, an orchard of blood. Evan stopped in his tracks in front of one of the blood storage units. To his side rose a gleaming, chrome-plated industrial safe. 5 feet tall, heavy-duty steel hinges bolted to the floor. Curious? Beside the safe was a tall metal filing cabinet, one drawer slightly ajar. He flicked it the rest of the way out. Medical files, each tab with a patient name. He snapped one up from the rack, flipped it open. A full medical workup of a girl listed as 17 years old. Blood screening and analysis, pathogen reduction and purification, red blood cell and platelet count. Franklin seemed barely to register Evan's approach. His skin had a gray, stoned pallor. Stubble fuzzed his cheeks and neck. A needle dangled from his left arm just below the cinched rubber strap, the tip still embedded in a swollen vein. Vials neatly lined a metal medical tray at his side. Evan sat the heavy coat on the neighboring mattress. "What is all this?" he asked. The doctor's chapped lips moved, but no sound came out. Evan grabbed one of the vials. Fentanyl. He threw it across the room. That brought the life back into Franklin's eyes. What is all this?" he said again. Franklin's slender hands spread open, as if bestowing grace.
"This is Renee's secret garden,"
he smiled.
"It's how he's fed."
Fed? He transfuses himself with this blood? For what?
Studies. There are studies.
Dr. Franklin's gaze loosened, and he drifted off. Evan cuffed him across the face. The elevator shaft conveyed raised voices from above, distorted shouts and radio static. Evan looked at all those bags, all those donor names.
He kills these people? No, no. Unless...
The smile flickered across Franklin's face. An inside joke.
Unless there are accidents.
His eyelids fluttered. Evan traced his dilated pupils to the ancient brick fireplace across the basement. Beneath the log holder, mounds of dark ash. Only now did Evan feel the cold of the room seeping through his skin, sinking into his bones. Crossing the space on deadened legs, he dropped to his knees on the hard concrete before the fireplace. He swept a hand through the ash, came up with a metal hoop the size of a silver dollar. A gauge earring. He thought about the black smoke he'd seen pouring from the chimney 2 days before. Evan drew his hand through the heap one more time, let the ash sift between his fingers like sand. A dental bridge remained on his palm. He wished now that he had killed David for helping lure the victims here. It was not, however, too late for Franklin. Half turning, Evan unleashed a volley of rounds at the refrigerator units, shattering the glass and ripping through the IV bags. Shards and red droplets filled the air, raining down on the concrete floor. He shot up the equipment next, riddling the oversized units, sending forth showers of sparks. Only the safe remained impervious, the bullets pinging off the chrome exterior. From his languid recline, Franklin watched Evan approach. A clanking echoed down from above, the guards up in the spa forcing open the elevator doors. Evan could hear Renee's men monkeying down the shaft. He stood over Franklin, backlit by the dim glow of the shot-to-shit unit behind him, his shadow falling across the doctor's face. A drop clung to the lower lid of Franklin's left eye, but he didn't look sad. He looked relieved.
Yes,
Franklin said with a wan smile. He swept an arm toward the sparkling machines.
It deserved it.
He blinked, and the tear gummed on his lashes.
I deserve it.
Evan raised the AK. The single report echoed around the concrete. Across the room, a series of thuds announced the men's landing on top of the elevator. From the sound of it, they had numbers. Evan had succeeded in drawing them here to the belly of the chalet. He buttoned up the guard's heavy coat, kicked over a medical cart beneath one of the basement windows, readied the slender remote in one hand, the Kalashnikov in the other. He shot out the basement window, then hopped up on the cart and dove through the opening in the glass. As soon as he hit the snow, he clicked the remote, turning on the outdoor lights. The chalet and grounds lit up like day. A pair of approaching guards reeled back, clutching at their night vision goggles, the sudden brightness scalding their retinas. The sniper on the northern slope behind his night vision scope would likewise be blinded. With the last of his bullets, Evan stitched a line of holes across the guard's critical mass, spilling them forward into the snow. As he tossed the weapon aside, swept up a set of night vision goggles, and bolted for tree cover at the base of the southern slope, he ran his mental tally. 2 dogs, 6 guards, 2 snipers, David and Dex. Not a bad night's work. 39. To the brink. Snow flurried even under the canopy of pines. Evan worked a switchback beneath the tress of the southern slope, sticking to a furrow cut into the mountainside to keep his head low. He had a hitch in his step, and his ribs ached. All that fighting had taken a toll. He didn't know the south sniper's position, so he paused again, snapping the night vision goggles down over his eyes and peering across the crest. The NVGs cast everything in a green glow. He swept his gaze up the hillside, caught a set of eyes glinting back at him. He reeled away, banging against a boulder before realizing that the eyes belonged to a white-tailed deer. It stared dolefully at him across the night, before bounding off with a twitch of its legs. Evan crouched by the boulder, catching his breath and reaching back for the wilderness skills he'd learned as a young man. The three keys to survival: shelter, fire, water. He'd been taught how to pick a spot, high ground, cleared space, and to frame out a hut, shingling leaves over branches. But the current situation wouldn't allow for that yet. There would be only sporadic rest stops until he was out of the valley and across the range. He was running on increasingly numb legs. Any stop could kill him. And yet if he got too cold, his body would lock up and he'd die of exposure. Which meant he had to balance himself on the razor's edge, running himself to the brink of freezing before pausing to reheat over a fire. To the brink, but not an inch further. He drove on up the slope.
René surveyed the wreckage of the spa, his jaw tensing until he could feel knots at the corners. David stood behind him, an ice pack pressed against his pretty face where it had struck the pebble-studded bench inside the mist room. One of René's men struggled to fish Kalaka's corpse from the pool. Another mopped blood from the tile. Manny was downstairs safing the lab, and René had dispatched Dex with the remaining three guards to follow Evan's tracks. The snow proved helpful, the footsteps clearly marked. A radioed update had informed René that Evan had backtracked a few times to obscure his trail, but hadn't had enough time to pull it off convincingly. Dex was good with footprints. René rubbed his eyes until they burned. David removed the ice pack and pressed gingerly at the bruise coming up on his forehead. "Guy was like a typhoon," he said. "It was pretty insane." René opened his bloodshot eyes. His thumb and forefinger held dust from the foundation he'd dabbed over the spider veins on his nose earlier. The look he gave David must have held everything he was feeling, because David recoiled from it, blanching. Fear had stripped away the kid's seen-it-all veneer. He looked his age, not a day older. David cleared his throat.
"I'll be upstairs."
René said, "You'll be right here until Manny gets back." For once, David offered no pithy retort. As if on cue, the elevator doors opened and Manny emerged. He ran a tongue across his gold teeth, one cheek quivering nervously beneath the eye.
"You're gonna want to see this, boss."
René felt something inside him turn to ice. Evan ducked under a half-snapped tree trunk, hurdled the snarl of branches, pressing up the face of the mountain. The crisp air charged his lungs, set them tingling. Though he'd made it halfway up the mountain, the final incline looked to be the steepest. As he scrabbled up a cracked sheet of shale, his boots sent pebbles cascading behind him. He tumbled over the brink into a bed of decomposing needles. The sharp tips poked his palms as he shoved himself back up. He paused to tie his boots even tighter, but had trouble gripping the laces, his fingers fumbling around the cords. Another few minutes, and he'd be too cold to help himself. Though the sun remained below the horizon, a curtain of dirty gray showed to the east, starting to rise across the black bowl of the sky. It was just light enough that he might risk a fire. Given the condition of his fingers, there wasn't a better choice. He stopped, panting, warring with himself. "I will get to you,"
He'd promised the kid. And he pictured that yellow shipping bill floating away on the wind outside the holding house in Fullerton, the last record of Allison Siegler. He had to heat his body just enough so it could keep driving forward. He scanned his surroundings with the NVGs, looking for any sign of the sniper. Nothing. Inside a ring of close-set trees, he cleared a small patch of ground. He gathered a few fallen branches. Melting snowflakes clung to the bark, so he used the piano wire to strip the wetness and expose the dry wood beneath. The wire pinched his pink hands. It was a sloppy, imprecise process, but it got the job done. He coiled the piano wire back into a coaster-size loop. British Secret Service agents used to hide Geely surgical wire saws in their clothes during World War II, and Evan took a cue from them now. Yanking the padded insole out of his left boot, he slid the wire up toward the toe and then replaced the insole on top of it. As he laced up his boot again, he felt barely a bump beneath the ball of his foot. Next, he removed the packet of Doritos from his waistband. By now they were mostly crushed, but he selected a few of the bigger pieces and arrayed them on the ground. One of the lesser-known benefits of Doritos is that they're highly flammable. With a fingernail, he scraped a gob of pine pitch from the nearest trunk and smeared it across the crushed chip fragments to increase the combustibility. Then he tore two strips from the bottom of his undershirt and braided them into a rope, which he tied to either end of a not-too-thin stick to form a bow. His fingers were growing numb. Had he waited a few minutes more, he'd have been unable to form the knots. Now, he sawed the rope back and forth rapidly across another stick held perpendicular, causing the stick to spin in the makeshift tinder. Before long, he busted a coal, which he flicked into the bits of chips. A few steady breaths stoked it high enough to catch the humble heap of branches, and then a tiny fire flickered beneath his outheld hands, warming the palms. Normally, he'd bring water to a rolling boil before drinking it, but he didn't have anything to use as a pot, and besides, he trusted fresh-fallen snow. He warmed himself, chewed a bit of ice, then ate an apple. The whole time he kept his NVGs lowered, scanning the hillside and the valley below. Life crept back into his face and arms. Just a few minutes more, and he'd be on his way. The elevator doors opened on the blood-spattered basement. Renee emerged through the fog of his own disbelief, blinking to ensure that what he was seeing was in fact real. Spoiled blood dripping from tattered IV bags. Medical machinery reduced to wreckage. Dr. Franklin's fragmented head resting on the sodden sheets of the gurney. The tangle of images knocked around inside him, sharp edges slicing beneath the skin, rising up his throat until he bellowed his rage at the ruined medical lab. It was a roar of rage, yes, but laced with pain. He sensed David and Manny shrinking away behind him, backpedaling to the walls, giving him space. Renee's chest heaved as he caught his breath. He'd relocated many times before, and he would relocate again. But this time he'd have to rebuild from scratch. New equipment, new doctor, new blood. Amid the remnants of the once glorious operation, the safe rose, gleaming and intact. Renee crossed to it, running a finger across a dimple in the chrome plating where a round had been repelled. He said, "Unlock it." Manny stepped forward, fumbling at his key ring.
"Are you sure?"
David said.
"You swore you'd never unlock it."
Manny rammed the key home and turned the weighty dial. The lugs inside released with a clang, and the door parted from the frame on well-greased hinges. Inside were several small glass vials and two filled syringes. Renee removed a syringe, and Manny took a quick step back, as if what it contained was contagious. Airborne. It was not. But it was scary enough to deter proximity. René touched the pad of his thumb to the plunger. The power of the ages held in the span of his hand. He cleared the air from the syringe with a hint of pressure from his thumb. Manny's radio crackled, one of the trackers calling in.
Recogimos sus huellas. Quizá hay una fogata delante y...
Footprints and a campfire. They were closing in. René snatched the radio from Manny's trembling hand and held it to his mouth. He regarded the gleaming tip of the needle. Bring him to me. Evan kicked snow over the ashes, stomping out the embers. Feeling had returned to his extremities, and he didn't want to risk lingering over the tiny flames any longer. Lowering his NVGs, he gave another spin, searching the mountainside. A wink of reflected light caught his eye. Way up by the brink, 10 or so clicks distant, a man lay prone on an outcropping of rock, angled slightly away. The South Sniper. Evan's last obstacle. The man swept the rifle slowly back and forth, scanning the hillside below. As the scope moved to turn full circle, Evan dropped to the cold earth behind a tree trunk and lay still. He exhaled down into the collar of his jacket so his clouding breath wouldn't give him away. When he risked a look again, he saw that the sniper had directed his attention to another stretch of the rise. Dawn was leaking through the valley, sending a glare off the new-fallen white. If Evan could get across the swell of land beside him, he'd be out of sight, his path to the summit clear. Once he made it over the brink into the vast surrounding mountains, René's men would never catch him. One more stretch of snow, and he'd be free. He checked the sniper again, but the man was still facing away. All clear. Evan bolted. The uneven earth jarred his boots, the dense pines jolting back and forth, as much obstacle course as cover. He crested the rise and saw the ground slope away. He slid down on the soft-packed snow, dropping over the final swell, dipping from the South Sniper's vantage. He was beyond reach. He'd made it. He lay for a moment, catching his breath, enjoying the sight of the wide-open sky above. Then he shook snow from the cuffs of his pants and started to stand. He'd just pulled himself up to full height when a wedge of tree trunk exploded 2 yards from his face, as if hammered free with an axe. Before he could process what had happened, he heard the big caliber signature boom across the valley. For a moment his thoughts spun in freefall. It made no sense. The South Sniper was lost to a fold of the mountain behind him. And the shot's trajectory was wrong. He scrambled into motion, heading for the nearest tree line. A bullet kissed the top of his shoulder, fraying the thick coat and obliterating a branch. He juked left, a half-assed wide receiver move, but already his legs were throbbing, his boots skidding on ice. Another shot whipped overhead, annihilating a pine cone. Splinters rained down across his shoulders. Any way he turned, he was in the crosshairs. The pine cone was a message sent from the base of the valley. An incredible shot. With dawning dread, Evan put it together. The North Sniper had moved out of position, coming across the range to pin him down from an unexpected angle. This man who had taken a pine cone off Evan's palm from 500 meters. And Evan was in the middle of an open patch, fully exposed. One wrong step, and he'd be missing a limb. He froze. He could feel his heartbeat in the hollow of his throat. He gritted his teeth, bowed his head. Then he raised his arms, raised them high and wide so they'd be visible through a scope. He waited, his breaths jerking through his chest, steaming in the night air. After a time, he heard footsteps crunching through the snow behind him. The sound of reckoning. The footsteps neared, but he didn't dare turn around, didn't dare move. Not until a kick to the kidneys knocked him to the ground. Dex stood over him, his head cocked with some sentiment that couldn't quite make it into his eyes. 2 Narcos flanked him, their AKs pointed at Evan's chest. Dex's big hands swung at his sides, the tattoos flashing. Too broad smile, bloody scowl. One painted mouth dipped into a cargo pocket. The fingers came out, gripping the hinged open shock collar. Wearily, Evan lifted his head from the snow to see the big hands nearing. His vision clouded. Even so, he could hear the collar clank shut around his neck.
40. People Who Deserve It.
Evan's feet dragged lifelessly behind him, leaving ski tracks in the snow. The morning glare off the ground was piercing, forcing him to squint. His legs and arms throbbed from the cold. His head hung forward, hair latticing his eyes. A narco had him by either arm, Dex leading the merry little charge. They hauled him into the barn and threw him onto the wrestling mat. Shuddering, he curled on the blue rubber. Only now did he allow himself to register the state of his body. The chill crept into his bruises, stung the ring of raw flesh around his neck. His head swam from the cold, from the exertion, from more kicks and punches than he could keep track of. He could no longer feel his nose or his lips. His ankles ached, his thighs burned, his calves were on fire, his breath growing more ragged by the second. If he died here in this desolate valley, he'd be another in a long list of people who had failed Allison Siegler and the boy. And yet how could he rescue them when he was in need of rescuing himself? There was a lesson in that somewhere, of that he was sure, but he didn't know what. If Jack were alive, he'd summarize it neatly into something pithy, part koan, part fortune cookie. He'd put the situation into context, salvage it by turning it around on Evan, transform impotence into insight. Evan stared at the circle of narcos penning him in and tried to convert his helplessness to rage. But the old tricks no longer worked. Not right now. He felt undressed, vulnerable, defeated. He heard the barn door roll open. Footsteps. He caught a whiff of familiar cologne. It smelled like a country club. Renee's voice settled over him.
Your plan didn't work out very well.
No,
Evan said.
Doesn't seem to have.
Two of the men patted him down roughly. One of them yanked the Rome Zone from his pocket and handed it to Renee. With amusement, Renee regarded the smashed screen and the cracked casing, bubbled from the fire. He laughed at the seemingly useless phone and tossed it back at Evan. With numb fingers, Evan fumbled it into his pocket, then curled into himself again to try to generate warmth. The collar scraped into the tender flesh at the contact points. Renee adjusted his eggplant-colored scarf.
You look cold.
Evan licked his cracked lips and tried not to shudder. Tried and failed. Finally, he let his eyes roll up to take in the stout man once again. Manny stood behind him. Evan drummed up a smile.
The band's getting back together.
You'll find that your humor is going to evaporate quickly, Renee said.
I've seen what you do in that medical lab.
Evan's fingers moved to the scab in his arm.
You stole my blood when I was passed out.
You're too old, Renee said.
You're just the bank. The kids, they're the feast.
Evan had to breathe a few times to get enough oxygen.
Why do you want their blood?
Renee took a moment to smooth down his hair. He adjusted the thick fabric of his suit, skimming his hands over the lush lapels. Scientists at Cornell have been conducting the most fascinating research, he said. They took old rats and young rats and stitched them together at the flanks, literally combined their circulatory systems. You wouldn't believe what they discovered.
Try me.
The short version is that it reversed aging in the older rats. Turns out that bathing old stem cells in young blood has a rejuvenating effect. It enhances memory, strengthens skeletal muscle, hastens healing. Who would have thought that the fountain of youth was right there all along? A fountain inside our youth. He paused, pleased, and studied Evan.
Let me guess. You object vehemently. I've committed a moral atrocity that flies in the face of nature.
Antibiotics and skyscrapers fly in the face of nature, Evan said. I don't give a shit about natural or unnatural. I care about who you're doing this to.
Oh, I just skim a little off the top, like a mosquito. Besides, you're hardly one to object to hurting people.
I only hurt people who deserve it.
Rene showed off his glorious caps.
You are such a wonderfully pure thing, a self-made construct.
Evan pushed himself up to sit on the mat. He still felt weak from the exposure, but his arms were tingling, the blood flow picking up again.
The young rats. You didn't say what happens to them.
Well, that's the unfortunate part, Rene said. They aged prematurely. Their muscles broke down, didn't heal the same way. Every benefit has a cost.
As long as you're not paying it, right?
That's right.
So you get David to lure kids here, and you siphon off their blood. But it's not a perfect science, is it? Sometimes it goes bad.
Every advancement has its complications. There's a difference between stealing and killing.
Not really, Rene said. In one instance, I steal blood. In the other, I steal a different resource.
The only resource not able to be replenished. Time. Killers are only thieves of a different stripe. They steal time. The time their victims would have had left to live. 10 years. 40. They take it to enhance their own time. It's a trade, and it favors the bold. Just like those who can afford better medications, safer cars, who had the birthright and luck not to be born in a flea-bitten third-world shack. Let the kids I... Here he searched for a word. Sip from, generally emerge unharmed, is a testament to my magnanimity. There's nothing to stop me from taking everything every time.
Except your kind heart.
I don't like to do harm, you see.
I'm just willing to.
Rene set his hands on his knees and leaned over Evan, and for the first time Evan considered just what a large man he was.
However, given the mess you left in my basement, I'll enjoy what I'm going to do to you.
He stood up, clasped his hands.
But we have so much to clean up first.
Dex was suddenly behind Manny, relieving him of his Kalashnikov. There was a slight delay as Manny seemed to realize what had happened, and then his mouth stretched into a rictus of dread, a twitching oval lined with gold teeth. No words emerged.
Halbador. He speaks poor English, is that correct?
Rene asked, gesturing at one of the men who had dragged Evan through the snow. Manny stared into the middle distance. Is that correct? Rene repeated. Manny managed a nod. Rene flicked two fingers, and Halbador stepped forward. A skinny kid in his early 20s, he hadn't yet thickened into manhood. A wide belt cinched his jeans, holding them up. The Santa Muerte tattoo on his neck was inked, but only half-colored, a few scabs still showing from the needle. With his wispy mustache and lupine cheeks, he was young and mean and had a lot to prove. Manny would not look at him. Rene said to Manny, "Will you translate for me?" Another tiny nod. Rene cleared his throat. Tell him that, given your failure, he will be succeeding you in your position. Manny's lips wobbled, his mustache bristling. He palmed his mouth, trying to still it. Tell him, Renee said. Dex sidled a step closer, set a hand on the ledge of Manny's shoulder. Manny said,
Dado mi fracaso, es posible que vas a tomar mi posición.
Tell him that his primary, no, his only job, will be to watch our guest. Renee stabbed a finger down at Evan on the mat. Manny cleared his throat.
Solamente tienes que echarle un ojo a nuestro huésped.
Tell him you are hopeful for his success, and wish him well. Manny's Adam's apple twitched. He turned to Renee.
Por favor.
You are hopeful for his success, and wish him well.
Tengo la...
Renee nodded encouragingly. Manny licked his lips, his gold caps gleaming. His brow glistened with sweat.
Tengo la esperanza de tu éxito y te deseo lo mejor.
René looked at Albador, who raised his AK-47 and put a tight grouping of bullets through Manny's chest. Evan thought, two dogs, five guards, two snipers, David and Dex. Halbador dragged Manny's body out through the rear barn doors, leaving a path of blood across the concrete.
Nice show, Evan said.
Don't worry, Renee said. It's not over yet. Dex pushed open the door to the interior office and pulled Despy out by her hair.
41. No ready answer. Despy kicked and tried to shove herself away from Dex, but she was seismically overpowered. He carried her across the barn like a squirming lab rat and set her gently on her feet before Renee. Dex kept one hand clamped on the back of her neck. Somehow Evan had managed to find his feet. Four guards ringed him. In case the Kalashnikovs weren't sufficient, each was armed with a transmitter for the shock collar. Anyone could get in on the fun now. Renee regarded Despy.
Our guest used a carjack to aid in his non-escape, he said. Any idea where he got it?
Evan said, I stole it from the barn when I snuck in here yesterday.
Renee kept his gaze steady on Despy. She writhed in Dex's grip, and then the muscles of his arm corded and she gave a yelp and stopped struggling.
If you tell the truth, Renee said, I won't hurt you.
I'd never take anything from her, Evan said. I don't trust her. She's one of your employees.
Despy, Renee said gently, I have cameras in the bar. Is this really a lie you want to stand behind?
Slowly, she raised her eyes to meet Renee's. She gave the faintest shake of her head, the tips of her dark locks swaying.
Did you give him the carjack? Renee asked. Her lips trembled. She nodded.
Okay. He stroked her chin.
Okay.
Do you really have cameras in the barn?
She asked.
No,
Renee said. She bit her lower lip.
You promised you wouldn't hurt me.
And I will honor that promise, Renee said. Nothing will happen to you.
In fact, nothing will happen here at all. She closed her eyes, freeing tears that slid down her olive skin. Renee turned and started out. Evan stayed tense.
However,
Renee stopped, his back to her. One of the many benefits of money is that I can commission people anywhere in the world.
Despy blanched.
Slowly, he turned.
Say, in Rhodes?
Athens. He held out his hand, palm up. One of the narcos placed an iPad on it.
No.
Despy shook her head.
No, no, no.
René hummed to himself as he tapped the screen. He held up the device for Despy. Evan couldn't see what it held. but he saw the glow reflected in Despi's eyes. The impact on her was immediate. She took a half step back as if staggered by a punch. Her face shifted, hollowed out beneath the skin, her eyes sunken and glazed. Renee swiped a finger across the screen, bringing up the next image. She strangled a small noise in her throat. Her words came in a hoarse whisper.
No, not her, too.
She hunched over, her shoulders shuddering. She made sounds befitting war zones and hospital rooms. Guilt flared up inside Evan, scouring his insides, threatening to consume him.
Not a hair on your head will be touched, as promised. In fact, you're free to go.
Renee rested a hand on Despi's forearm.
Dex will drop you at an airport of your choice with a full wallet. By helping my guest, you've earned your freedom.
I hope it was worth it. Despi straightened back up. Her face was flushed, streaked with tears, but her gaze was fierce, unbroken. Renee said,
I'll even let you say goodbye to your friend before you depart.
He gestured toward the wrestling mat.
Despi's stare skewered Renee. For a moment he even seemed unsettled. Then she started over to Evan. She looked broken from within, her limbs held at the wrong angles, her gait and carriage different, as if she were learning to walk inside a new body.
Renee indicated for his men to give them some space. Evan wasn't sure if she was going to strike him. If she wanted to, he would let her. Instead, she embraced him, squeezing him hard, her face mashed to his chest. He stroked her thick, thick hair.
I'm sorry, he whispered into her. I tried to warn you.
He was shocked at the note of anger that had found its way into his voice. Fire crawled across his skin, matting his shirt to his back. Everything felt jumbled together inside him, trespasses past and present. He pictured Jack clutching at the ball of his shoulder, his hand gloved in blood. A little more pressure, a little more time, and he might have lived. If Evan hadn't asked him to meet, if they'd chosen a different day, a different hour, a different parking structure, if Evan had been quicker on the draw, if he hadn't taken the carjack, if he'd thrown Despi out of his room. The photographs Renee had shown Despi of her slain family would live inside her, as surely as Evan's memories of parking level 3 lived inside him. He couldn't undo it for her. Not just her present anguish, but the years of pain to come, dividends paid out over the decades. She looked up at him with the same fierceness she'd shown minutes before.
Do you think my family would have been safe if I hadn't helped you? Don't be naive.
He hadn't thought anything could shock him right now, but there it was.
Naive? You think you're at the controls just like Renee, but you couldn't control this.
He felt his face loosening with emotion. She said, accepting that you need help like everyone else. It doesn't guarantee a good outcome.
Nothing does.
He had a hard time swallowing.
Then why do it?
She kissed him, her tears wet against his cheeks. She pulled away, held his face, her breath hot.
I don't know how to live with this, with what I saw.
I know that's how it feels.
How would you kill me? Right now?
Her voice held a note of pleading. He looked at her brimming eyes, the wisp of hair caught in the corner of her mouth, felt the warmth of her pressed against him, her fragile human form. For the first time, he had no answer. Dex snapped a black hood over her head and yanked her out of Evan's arms. He dragged her to the Rolls-Royce, her legs stumbling to keep up. After cinching the hood and knotting it off, he opened the rear door, depositing her inside. He reversed out of the barn, the back of the majestic car kissing a snowbank outside, and drove off.
Evan felt a sting in his palms and unclenched his fists to see that his fingernails had indented the skin. He looked over at Renee. At one point,